You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Hello, welcome please to Telstra Customer Service. How may I be helping you?
Conform or be consumed.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history.
I heard a rumour today.
I like your rumours.
I know, as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school. How can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
What is your environmental policy?
To sell Telstra.
You heard of road rage?
Yes.
What about web rage?
And within a few minutes.
Minutes.
Yeah, minutes. It's not minutes. XG, mate.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McCollum. There's plenty to talk about in the Australian technology scene at the moment. What with Sol Trujillo's $3 million pay rise, John Howard's free porn filters for all, and the sweet victory by ICE TV over the Nine Network in relation to Nine's outrageous allegation that it owned the copyright of its TV program guide. But first this week, I bet you didn't know that Sol Trujillo's salary is 38 times that of the Prime Minister of Australia. Yes, you heard me correctly. Mr. Trujillo's total pay packet increased by $3 million last financial year to $11.78 million, 38 times the Prime Minister's salary. John Howard said on radio last week that he wasn't complaining about the salary that he gets, but he did think the average Australian, who gets paid a lot less than he does, regards that sort of salary as being absolutely unreasonable. A sentiment that I wholeheartedly agree with, except one exception. I'd substitute the word unreasonable with obscene. As a shareholder, you really do have to ask if it's good value for money. Also this week, the free-to-air television networks are finally coming to a harsh reality that the way consumers get their news and entertainment is changing. The day of free-to-air TV's dominance in the marketplace is now no longer. Recently, the Seven Network announced a partnership with TiVo in an effort to provide commercial-free TV to the masses, but at a cost. And this week, PBL's Nine Network lost a case over its alleged breach of copyright of its program guide. With the rollout of ADSL2 broadband in this country, albeit hindered by the likes of Telstra, Australians are turning to the new frontier for news and entertainment in ever-increasing numbers. We are already known as the great downloaders, thanks to the attitude of commercial networks, and this will only continue to grow in popularity as ADSL2, and maybe even fibre to the node, broadband penetrates the Australian marketplace. There's one saving grace in the Australian broadcasting industry, though, and that's good old Auntie. The ABC is at the forefront of the information and entertainment revolution, actively pursuing online options. With a meagre budget of just $850 million a year for the whole organisation, Auntie manages to provide an exemplary example of just how to use the online world. Vodcasts, podcasts, and the live streaming of programmes is just the start. So as the ABC embraces the future, the old school of commercial television seems set to follow the path of self-annihilation and become destined for a life of obscurity.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Adam Turner joins us live in the studios to talk about living room convergence. Microsoft talks to Tech Talk Radio about Server 2008. We get the panel's reaction to Sol's $3 million pay rise. The election campaigning ramps up with John Howard's porn filter for all, and Coonan opens up the broadband race. All that and more on Australia's premier tech talk show, Tech Talk Radio. But first, let's find out what's been making news in the tech world this week.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, ISPs say new government porn filters are unworkable, ICE TV wins EPG battle against Nine Network, Universal Music plays DRM hardball with Apple, demand for IT executives continues to fall, and Telstra announces growth in mobiles, broadband internet and census. Welcome to Tech Talk News. In the ever-changing Australian political landscape prefacing a federal election later this year, the Prime Minister was joined by the Minister for Communications last week, announcing a $189 million program to protect Australian families from online danger. In a press release, Senator Coonan said the new program, Net Alert, was an ambitious initiative that would give families the tools they need to manage their internet experience, as well as tough new policing and enforcement measures. The comprehensive package will go live on Monday, the 20th of August. The package includes a filter scheme, either desktop or ISP-based, a new Net Alert website, filtering of all computers in public libraries, and a toll-free internet safety helpline. Internet service providers were quick to slam the government's proposal as radical and unworkable, and some analysts noted that users who opt to switch on the filtering will be subjected to significantly reduced internet speeds. Steve Delby, Chief Regulatory Officer at Australian ISP iiNet, said filtering the internet at the ISP level instead of at home was unworkable and would affect the performance of the network quite significantly. Opposition communications spokesman Stephen Conroy accused the government of rehashing old announcements in an attempt to portray a tough stance on internet safety in the lead-up to the federal election. In what's been described as a David and Goliath battle played out before the federal court, the Nine Network last week lost its bid to retain control over programming content in ICE TV's Electronic Program Guide, or EPG. ICE TV's EPG is an online TV guide which can be used digitally by personal video recorders to start and stop recording of advertised free-to-air programs. The Nine Network claimed that ICE TV was breaching copyright by including program information in its EPG. Justice Annabel Bennett agreed that while Nine owned the copyright to its program guide, ICE TV was free to independently compile its own EPG and awarded costs against Nine for the legal action. ICE TV's general manager, Matt Kossatz, said the decision was a win for Aussie consumers who owned personal video recorders and digital media centres. In a blow to Apple's iTunes online music store, Universal Music Group, the largest music recording company in the world, has announced plans to trial sales of music without digital rights management. Universal has challenged Apple by offering DRM-free music through iTunes competitors for 99 US cents, the same price as its DRM music sells for on iTunes. The trial will involve download sites like Real Network's Rhapsody and Amazon.com, and will also be available from music retailers in the US, including Walmart and Best Buy. Analysts believe the announcement will cause Apple both anger and a degree of concern, as iPod owners for the first time will be able to choose between Universal's DRM music from iTunes or Universal's DRM-free music at the same price from an iTunes competitor. Demand for IT executives has fallen for the second month in a row, according to a monthly survey of the major top-end employment sectors. IT Wire reported last week that according to headhunting firm EL Consult, information technology demand was the one sector to fall in July, losing 3% compared with the previous month. The drop follows a similar fall in demand over June. Meanwhile, the finance, engineering, management and marketing sectors all experienced a growth in demand. EL Consult believes that the latest news, coupled with the performance of the IT jobs sector over the past 2 years, as well as rising interest rates, paints a bleak picture for the long-term IT executive employment outlook. And Telstra last week announced that revenues for the second half of the 2006-07 financial year were up nearly 4% to $24 billion, owing in no small part to growth in mobiles, broadband internet and directory service census. But Telstra CEO Sol Trujillo tempered the announcement by suggesting that next year might not be so good as the incumbent telco moved from a traditional telephony business to a media communications company. Telstra's earnings growth had been partially offset by declines in fixed-line services, dial-up internet and its New Zealand broadband business, Telstra Clear. Mobile revenue alone grew nearly 14% to $5.7 billion, reflecting continued customer growth and higher average revenue per user. Mobile services revenues grew by nearly 10%. Mr. Trujillo also noted that Telstra's 3G subscribers had now passed 2 million, with NextG customer numbers topping 1 million and outnumbering CDMA subscribers at the end of July. And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
I've got a gripe here.
It's important to remember that when computer people talk about a bug, what they're meaning is a programming error as opposed to a virus, which is something completely different.
The problem was caused by your NVIDIA graphics driver. Recommendations? Change graphics card.
Are you not real?
Telstra is alleging that the process by which the funding was increased and subsequently awarded to Opel was not fair.
It's monkeys in the cage.
Am I being cynical
she
here?
She got something thrown at her and she's thrown something back.
All this tit-for-tat stuff is just completely bizarre. Don't you find it? It's just odd. It's very strange.
3 billion songs.
Has there really been 3 billion songs written in the history of man?
The finer you make the particles of toner, the higher quality the image.
Yes.
I've got a feeling Adam's going to have something to say about this.
Let's talk about Elton John. He wanted the internet shut down for 5 years to see how the production of music is
shut
affected.
Down.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. Graham, my internet's broken. You say, oh, well, it's not broken. It's
Elton John shut it down.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio for yet another week. Hello, everybody, and a very big welcome to a new station taking us for the very first time this week, which is 100.7 FM up in Highlands in central Victoria. So welcome to our new listeners through there. Joining us tonight on the panel, special night tonight, we've got Adam Turner joins us and Dr. Ron. Adam Turner live in the studio. Very good evening to you, Adam.
Yeah, thanks. It's good to be back here again.
It's good. More than welcome. And Dr. Ron.
Hello, hello. Yes, good to be back once again. Hello to all the Highlands people. That's tremendous.
Yeah, day off and all and you're late. I'm impressed with that. That's good.
I've got to go back time. To work for a holiday. It's I've been frantic today. I've been battling with Front Page this afternoon.
Have you?
What a...
Front Page. Why are you going there? Front Page is a very
old... What a horrific
old
experiment
I thought that had been banned under the Geneva Convention.
I think it has, Adam.
It's been banned by a lot of web-serving companies, that's for sure. This thing's called Front Page Extensions. I think it nukes your website, doesn't it?
Yes, after about 3 hours, I gave up and sold the customer a copy of Dreamweaver, so it's all good.
Oh, terrific. Okay, so technologically speaking, interesting week. We've moved. The Tech Talk Radio offices have moved from the city. We've just moved out of the city a bit. So today's been one of those days of...
You've had a very busy day.
Yes, I've been playing hide and seek with phone lines around the office tonight. Nothing ever matches those customer records that the linings leave in the back of the cupboard there. So anyway, no, it's been fun. How's your week been, Dr. Ron? Anything exciting?
Just busy, 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 busy. Same old, really.
Yeah.
But going well. I had an interesting week talking to Microsoft. Now, they've had the TechEd conference up at the Gold Coast.
They have.
I'm very envious.
We're actually talking to Microsoft tonight on tonight's show.
Good, good, good. I had a chat to some people as well, Oscar Trimboli.
And yeah,
we'll
I know
be
Oscar.
You know Oscar? Yeah, we'll be hearing from him sometime over the next few episodes, but you've been speaking to some people as well this weekend.
Yes, Julius Singvisicus, I think is how you pronounce it. I'm really sorry, Julius, if that's not how you pronounce your surname, but nonetheless, he's from Redmond in the United States, from the home of Microsoft, and we're going to have a brief chat about Windows Server 2008, the new beastie that they're going to unleash upon us come February, I think, 27th next year. So that should be good. Now, I've been saving the best question for last. Adam, how's your week been in tech this week?
not too bad. I've been playing around with the satellite navigation thing today, and I thought I'd take it out of the box, not look at the instructions or anything, just tell it, right, I'm going to Tech Talk Radio. It wasn't quite that fancy. I had to tell it where the place was. And I got here beautifully until I realized that I'd remembered the wrong street. And so I drove up and down the street and I thought, I've been here once before, this is not it. And so I had to turn to the old paper mail ways to look at the map and went, yeah, that's right, that street over there. So it doesn't matter how good the technology is, if you screw up the address, you're going back to the paper.
Isn't that always the way though? You know, the best laid plans and then all of a sudden if you get one digit wrong, it's like typing an email, isn't it? You know, that one typo will just shoot you down in flames.
But up until that point, I was very impressed with it.
Were you? You obviously weren't going that fast because, you know, they sort of need a bit of distance to actually tell you when to turn right and turn left. Was it speaking to you?
This one was pretty good, actually. Yeah. It was telling me the names of the streets. I've never tested one before that would tell me the names of the streets.
What sort of accent was it?
A bit of an American sort of an accent, but okay. you live with that. But at least it was telling me the old ones would just be turn left and then be two lefts, like close to each other. Like, what do I do? This one was actually telling me street names. So.
Yeah. Does it get potentially aggressive as you get closer to the turn and you don't turn?
No, I actually think it's pretty smart because when I realized that I was at the wrong place and was going up and down and started swearing and stuff, I didn't hear a word from it after that.
Oh, good.
I think I figured out that something had gone terribly wrong and it just decided for its own safety to shut up and sit in the corner.
It's investing in its own welfare.
Yes, it's longevity. Kind of survival.
Or I'm not going, it goes into survival mode. Yeah.
Oh, dear. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is our email address. A very good evening to Jeff Dudley, who says, oh, everyone's working on the streams tonight, so that's good. So who knows where we might get some listeners from this evening. We have some new listeners in Central Victoria. And if you'd like to participate, you feel free. We've got many ways to do that. You can ring us on our feedback number, 1300 664 882. You leave a message there and you'll hear yourself on the radio. The other way is at the forum, forum.techtalkradio.com.au, which is where you can come and contribute and ask questions and do all sorts of things with other like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners. And of course, you want to talk to us while we're live on air. If you're listening to us live on air, feedback at techtalkradio.com.au, or to bypass the spam filter, on air at techtalkradio.com.au.
That's the secret email address. We don't have that on the internet
anywhere.
No,
we don't put that anywhere on the internet.
So we only get messages at that address from people who have listened to the show, which is always good.
Are you sure there's no spam filter on that?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Oh, I have logged in.
I had problems getting through the other week.
Did it? Okay, we'll double check, but I'm pretty sure there's no spam filter on there. But
it just
for that very
like
reason.
Me.
Doesn't it? We use the form. We got a form on the thing. That always gets through. So give that a bit of a whirl. Okay, let's kick off tonight. As you probably heard in my opener, who gets paid 38 times more than the current Prime Minister of Australia?
You do. No.
I wish.
You wish you do.
I wish. Yes, Sol Trujillo's current pay packet, $11.78 million a year. That's not bad, really. What would you do? You wouldn't know what to do with it all, surely.
He could have a lot of schmoozy lunches.
I'm sure he does.
Yeah.
Well, he lives down there. He can listen to us live, actually, because he lives in... was it Freshwater Tower down there in Docklands?
I wonder who his ISP is. Do you reckon he's got a BigPond.com address?
He can afford to pay the excess data charge.
Yeah, he couldn't he? Yes.
See, not ours, but people who are silly enough to be with Telstra, their excess data charges are paying his $11 million. So you know where your money's going now.
Well, it's funny, isn't it? Because we were listening to them saying, oh, yes, they did their profit and speculation thing during the course of the week. 66% increase in revenue from broadband. Now, that's not bad because, you know, they meter their uploads and everyone's just signs up with Telstra because they can.
Where's that coming from? I'd be interested to know how much of that is excess data.
Well, speaking of that, was it Margaret?
Friend Margaret. Yeah. She's put $50 into his pay packet the other week.
Has she?
Yeah.
How did she go with her Trojans and stuff?
Oh, to have got it all sorted out. I was watching her uploads and it stopped after that. Stopped after that. So whatever it was, we nuked it.
Fantastic. And officially, thank you very much for your view from the couch. It's been absolutely lovely. You got a view from the studio tonight. I hope it's just as impressive.
I was going to say, I'll rant on about Ice TV later and you can just cut out that 5 minutes and put it up on its own and call it a view from the couch.
Very good. That'd be good.
A view from the office chair.
Yeah, it's a bit like that, isn't it? Anyway, back on track, John Howard, he's actually going to, you know, because we've got an election coming up, internet porn's back on the agenda again, and he's decided to... I don't know, how would you say? It's a package, which a filtering system, a CD, which is going to be given out to all those people who don't know how to, do it on your own computer, I guess, really, isn't it?
This was in the news. This is the new Net Alert initiative that was announced by the government last week.
Yep, and this is what he had to say.
The government is also partnering with internet service providers to enable them to make available the option of a filtered internet service to those families who want this option instead of home computer-based filters.
So instead of home computer-based filters, you get this option. Do you reckon...
That mean it's filtered at the ISP level?
Well, it can be either. My understanding is that the new system... Well, part of the new initiative, they're going to have a NetAlert website. You can download security software to run on your desktop. Or they're going to mandate that ISPs must be able to provide an ISP-based filtering system as well, if that's what you want to use.
Which is insane to use a technical term.
Well, it is. He was absolutely slammed by the industry last week, wasn't he? They just said it's completely unworkable, and we know you're trying to win an election, Johnny, but what are you thinking?
He's trying to win the old lady vote.
Well,
no idea about the technology, but he must be a good guy because he's trying to stop porn.
Can I put my cynical hat on again?
Certainly.
He lectured the...
You're taking it off.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, too right. He lectured the churchgoers the other day. So I wonder if this is just a flow on from that. I'm going to get up there and I'm going to say, we're going to stop porn. And everyone's gone, yes, John. Yes, like the American elections, I reckon.
He did a nice bit of gay bashing the other day as well because he knew it would win him some votes.
Oh, my goodness me. Peter Koronis is the chief executive of the Internet Industry Association of Australia. This was his reaction to John Howard's news.
If we were to move to a system where all ISPs were required to filter the entire internet before it went to their customers, then I think that would have significant performance degradation effects on the network. And so the challenge now is to understand what is being proposed here. And indeed, the government has permitted industry to conduct its own feasibility study to determine the best way in which a selective form of optional ISP filtering might be provided.
I reckon we should slow the internet down. Elton John would like that, don't you agree?
Elton John's got the right idea. Just turn it off for a few years.
That'd fix all the problems, wouldn't it?
Yeah, just kill it.
Yeah, they were talking about doing it at an ISP level, but that would, I don't know, that'd bring your megabits per second down hugely. Or the response time, you go, give me, you know, newspaperxyz.com.au and you can go and get a coffee while it just checks that there's no rude words or funny pictures or anything like that inside.
Who's to say it would work anyway?
Well, exactly. Yeah.
All the software I've ever looked at hasn't been very good anyway, especially stuff that tries to do it on the fly. The only ones I've seen that were close to good were the ones that had a blacklist maintained by someone else, and then it would check the site against the list. But anything that's trying to scan a site on the fly, A, is very slow, and B, is very hit and miss.
But those lists move and the sites move,
yeah,
because
exactly.
As soon as one disappears, another one comes up. So words is not really something that you can go off and search for. URLs or site addresses are nothing that you can come up with. It needs to be sort of some form of proactive. I know everyone needs to click a button. Oh, here's a nasty site. Just think, you could take the ABC down. If someone doesn't like the ABC, you click that button and everyone loses the ABC.
Some of the spam things. You report someone because you call them a spammer, and then that poor person has to prove to Spam House, I think it is, that they're not a spammer.
And, of course, because we're in an election year, we don't want to be biased or anything like that. Stephen Conroy came out. This is Senator Coonan's person sits opposite him on the park bench. He had this to say.
And what the Prime Minister has done is a very watered-down version of Labor's plan. He's just trying to play catch-up less than 100 days before he has to call an election. So he wants to look like he's tough on net porn, but if he wants to be really tough, he should adopt Labor's plan to have a mandatory clean feed that will block designated sites from actually being transmitted to people's homes.
I hear where he's coming from, but this is what we're saying. You can't block feeds. It's just it's just not an impossible. So, you know,
you've got to tie the tubes of the internet.
Exactly. Now, speaking of going to interesting sites, I went to the ICE TV site just before, and there's a lovely image there saying, we won, we won.
Paper beats rock.
Paper beats rock, yes, exactly. Firstly, tell everybody what ICE TV does, and then tell me about how they managed to be the Samson and Goliath type sort of battle, and they came out and won.
ICE TV provides an electronic program guide, and what that is it's a list of what's on every TV station for the next 7 days.
Now, does this work right around the countryside?
Yeah, because they compile different ones for each viewing area. So,
for
when
regional,
you subscribe, you tell
city,
it where you live.
Yeah.
And then it's sort of like the listing in the paper, but the difference is that this is in electronic form that you can download to your digital video recorder. So not your old VCR, but if you've got one of these new video recorders with a hard drive in it, you can download it to that, and then it can read the TV guide. And so you tell it, right, I want to tape Lost every week. And so it goes, okay, Lost is on whatever night. I don't know. I download these things. I don't watch them on TV. But Lost is on, you know, Wednesday night or whatever. Okay, I better tape
it. But isn't that the whole idea behind it? You don't need to know when it's on. You just say, I want to record
the
program.
Yeah, that is the way. Depending on which service it's on. Yeah, you just tell, I want to record Lost. And then it will, every day it'll read the TV guide and go, oh, Lost is on tonight. Okay, I better tape that. Now, the reason why people like Nine and the others don't like it is because these people use these with digital video recorders, and digital video recorders make it easy to skip ads. Now, ICE TV does not let you skip ads. I'm sick of the number of stories I've read online that says it does.
Only the TV does, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, but all ICE TV is a TV guide. It's the device that you're using, whether it's a TiVo or a computer or whatever. That's the device that does the recording. That's the device that does the ad skipping. It's not ICE TV's fault that people skip ads, but rather than attack the devices, it's easier to attack ICE TV. And so that's what Nine decided to do. So what Nine said is, actually, we have copyright over the TV guide. It's ours. You're not allowed to copy it. We're taking you to court. Now, last Friday morning, the Justice Annabelle came back and gave her a ruling and basically said, Channel 9 does have copyright over their TV guide as a whole, like as an entire document, but they don't have copyright over every little factoid within that guide. Now, ICE TV are not copying Nine's guide. ICE TV are writing their own guide of Nine. So they're allowed to do that. So it doesn't, it's not open slather for everybody. It doesn't mean you can just go out and copy Nine's guide word for word.
No, but if they compile their own guide and do their own research and put it together themselves, then anybody can do
and
that.
And they proved in court that that's what they do, and they have a process. When there was first problems with this, they said to all the networks, come in and we'll show you how we do it. Everyone accepted except for Nine.
Yeah.
Nine said, no, we're just going to sue you. Because Seven made a bit of noise as well. But then when I showed them how they did it, Seven said, okay, fair enough. We can say you're not copying what we do. You're compiling your own. And so Nine is now going to face damages, and the judge said that they're entitled, that Ice TV is entitled to sue for unjustified copyright threats or something like that. So I'm sure that the scuttled float will come up in conversation when Ice TV are talking about how much they need to be compensated for their troubles.
Is the Ice TV EPG, is that a subscription service?
Yes, it is a subscription service. They have, well, I think it's a 14-day free trial so you can play around with it. And then it's about $99 a year, so that's $2 a week. But it's not just the TV guide. They have other services as well. You can go into their website.
IceTV.com.au. You're looking at it right now, actually.
You can go into their website and say, click, I want to tape Lost. I want to record Lost. Sorry, can't say tape anymore.
Yep.
And it will send a message to your digital recorder at home saying, record Lost.
So you need to be, you need to have it connected to the internet, don't you?
It needs to be connected to the internet because it downloads the TV guide from the internet. There are other, some of the top field boxes don't have internet access, and so what you do is you download it to a USB stick and then you move it across. But Ice TV have said they're not going to support devices anymore, any new devices that don't have Ethernet, because Ice TV have got all these new services coming out. They want to do video on demand. They want to do some social networking sort of things where it compiles a list of who's recording what. And it doesn't say, oh, Dr. Ron's taping Lost, but it says the most popular show being recorded this week is Lost. And then you can leave your comments, and so it becomes a whole social thing.
It's going to be a little bit more accurate, I guess, than the traditional rating system that we used to have too, really, in a lot of respects.
That's another reason why the networks would be afraid of it.
Recently, we had Free TV Australia announcing their new whiz bang proprietary format or similar.
Yeah, because they thought that ICE would lose and then they'd have the EPG market locked up. They thought, right, Nine's going to take ICE out of the equation. No one else will be allowed to do this. We'll have it all locked up. We'll do it the way we want. We'll let it work with TiVo, and which TiVo's going to have the ad skipping disabled in Australia. We'll only let it work with our special boxes that we like. There'll be things with ad skipping disabled, so they'll have a frank exchange of ideas with LG for a start. And they thought they had it all locked in. And now that ICE has won, it's actually opened the door for ICE and even others. Like Foxtel and Seven have been fighting about sharing EPGs with each other. But now that ICE TV has won, it's possible that they could just go out and compile their own, as long as they do it the right way, without the permission of the other party. So, yeah, the ICE TV case was meant to knock everyone else out of the picture and lock it all down. And now that ICE has won, it's sort of screwed it up for them.
So Free TV jumped the gun a little bit, did they? Obviously. If they were going to come along and do this, or are we going to now have an NTSC and PAL version of it?
They had to announce that was to go with TiVo. TiVo was useless without an EPG.
Mm-hmm.
So that
will TiVo that, run with ICE on it? With the ICE EPG or not?
Not a one from Seven, I can bet you that. You might be able to hack one, because a lot of people in Australia have TiVos because they import them from overseas, change the tuners, hack them to work in Australia. But if you've got one from Seven, it'll be locked down very tight.
Andrew McComb.
Okay, I just got some spam from some Arabic country. I couldn't read it. It was lovely pictures, though.
Dr. Ron.
But it shouldn't be this hard.
It shouldn't be this complicated. You should just click on something and get your song.
Graham Callaghan.
Do you routinely take the covers off new devices just to see what's inside them?
Mark Diggins.
It's a bit of a shame it's come to this, because you shouldn't have to have identification to make a phone call.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You going to read the letter?
I can.
Oh, do you want me to read?
Glad we're all organised.
We did have a production meeting this evening.
It's a strictly rehearsed and finely polished program.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1300 664 882 and leave a voice message. That's 1300 664 882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. On the panel this evening, Dr. Ron Adam Turner and my good self, Andrew McComb. We're going to have a bit of a chat now, I think, about broadband. There's been a bit of broadband news around this week. Not too much, and we won't bore everyone silly. We get letters and all. Telstra talks with Labor at the moment. So they're thinking about moving their ideas across to see Mr. Stephen Conroy. The informal talks are in contrast to the breakdown in the relationship with the Howard government and Communications Minister Helen Coonan. Now, I don't know, have you heard any more about Telstra suing Senator Coonan? Anybody in the studio or anything like that?
No. Is there a breakdown?
Well,
oh dear.
Who would have noticed? They were such good friends.
Telstra. Sorry?
No, it was me, but keep going.
I was going to say, Telstra Chief Soltra here refused to comment on yesterday Labor's broadband policy, which, I don't know, having heard what Mr. Conroy said tonight about the spam filter things, I'm not 100% sure whether he's being advised in the right way in relation to broadband in this country. But nonetheless, I guess the bottom line is we need the speed, and it'd be really nice to have something like fibre to the node being brought out in most of the civilised centres, I guess. If you live a bit further afield out in the sticks, then you've got the wireless stuff, next gen, and all, I'd be guessing. So,
Telstra are watching the polls, sorry, just like everybody else, and they know that chances are they're going to be dealing with Labor in next year. So they've got to make friends with them now. They've got to say, hey, what's going on? Because, I still think John Howard's going to pull something out of the hat, not because I like him, not because I want him to, just because he's a very good politician.
He's very shrewd.
Shrewd's the nicest word I can think of, actually, shrewd. So you'd be crazy to write him off because he's been at least this far, if not further behind before, and managed to pull a rabbit out of the hat. But Telstra, you know, they've got to look long term. Telstra are going to be here after the next election, no matter who wins. So, you know, they've got to have a foot in each camp.
All right, and just briefly before we go to our Microsoft story tonight, violent game laws blocked in the United States. Now, what sort of ramifications is this going to have on our country? With a U.S. federal judge has called or has ruled a Californian law to be labeled violent video games and their sale to minors is unconditional, prompting Mr. Arnie Schwarzenegger to say...
Unconstitutional.
Unconstitutional.
But that's the whole point.
Yeah. So is this going to happen here? Are we going to sort of see all these violent video games come out? And if
so, there was a law that prohibited their sale, and
there was,
and they've come out and said, or Arnie's come out and said that it's unconstitutional.
Well, no, the courts have come out and said that it goes against I think it's the First Amendment right to free speech. Now we don't
to
have,
ban video games.
Yeah,
this is from a community with guns.
I guess it's the free speech of the game maker to be able to produce violent games. But we don't have a Bill of Rights here. There is no right to free speech in Australia. People think there is, but there's not. Mm. There's an implied right to political free speech. It's one of those case sort of found in big trial sort of thing. But generally, we don't have the right to anything really. So that particular law won't affect Australia, but we still have the problem that we don't have an R ratings for games in Australia.
No, we don't. That's
which really
been a
screws
case
things up.
For a
we
long
have
time.
It for every other medium, but apparently we have to treat games completely differently.
What's the highest rating that we have in Australia for a game?
Well, what, MA or whatever it is, 15?
Yeah, M15 plus.
And if it can't get that, then it's banned.
Is that right? Yeah, I didn't know that.
They've been pushing for have been pushing for years to try and get an R rating for games the same as everything else.
It's all through the IFLC, the Office of Film and Literature Classifications. They just don't have a category for them to put these somewhat, and I don't know why you'd want to buy them.
It's actually bad because it means that some games sneak through into 15 plus when if there was an 18, if there was an R rating, they would get an R rating. Mm. But because they've got to fall one way or the other, sometimes they fall into the 15 where they really shouldn't be there. So it's actually counterproductive because it's putting games on the shelf that would get an R rating if there was such a thing as an R rating. The Americans are funny. You can kill as many people as you want, but as soon as you see a nipple, all bets are off.
Yeah, isn't that strange? It is. It's very strange.
But that's very typical of their culture. There was a documentary series on the ABC recently talking about computer games and where they've come from and where they've gone to. They talked about first-person shooter games, which I guess is fairly predominant in the United States, almost to the point where the US military use video games. You can go and download this first-person shooter game, which is a recruitment tool of all things for the US military. And they're looking at doing that here in Australia too, from what I've heard in the mainstream media. And you've got to look at that. And as you say, it's all, kill anyone, shoot anyone, do whatever what you want, which is probably what you don't want to have on, kids' computer games around the place. But yet, we don't have a classification for it or anything. It's very frustrating, isn't it?
I just hope the irony is not lost on Schwarzenegger, who produced some of the great violent movies, or was part of the great violent movies of the 80s. you know, commando and all that kind of stuff.
That's true.
Where he dropped people off cliffs. What happened to him? I let him go. All that kind of stuff is now going, oh, we have to protect the children from the games. But, you know, the my body count from the 80s, you know, was just through the roof.
That's it.
We used to call them awe films. You know, Terminator and, you know, it's another awe film, you know.
Predator.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, yeah. There was, he made some good. I mean, they were bad good, you know what I mean? They were that junk in the middle of the night you'd stay up and watch good, not like Academy Award winning good.
I think Terminators were quite good, I thought.
They were pretty good. Pretty... 3 was woeful. 2 was very good. 2 was one of the few sequels that was as good, if not better, than the original. 3 just lost it.
True Lies is one of our favourite movies.
Oh, yeah, that's a ripper.
I don't know if I've seen that.
It's very,
that's
very good.
That's with, yes.
It's got the woman in it.
And I can't think of her name.
Yeah.
That's why we don't.
Jamie Lee.
Yeah, that's it, Jamie Lee Curtis, yeah. It's absolutely, that was a good one.
Very funny.
All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio, not the movie show.
Yeah, the movie review night tonight.
We're going to be talking
who's
about...
Who's Siskel and who's Ebert? Yeah. Oh, sorry, David and Margaret.
That's right, yes. They're good, but you can fight amongst each other like they do. I'll give it 5 stars, I'll give it none.
I hated this game.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back and talk technology. We're going to have a look at Microsoft's new Server 2008 offering after this.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Subscribing to the Tech Talk Radio podcast is so easy. It's it's child's play. Oh, it's child's play.
Podcasting is so easy. Even my little sister Emily can do it.
Step 1. Download and install some podcatching software like iPodder, Thunderbird or iTunes. Step 2. Find the address of the Tech Talk Radio podcast feed on the Tech Talk Radio website. Step 3. Copy and paste the feed address into your podcatching software. And you're done. Now every week you'll be able to listen to Tech Talk Radio whenever, wherever and however you like. You could be mowing the lawn on a train.
But car is Charlie Pussy.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Windows Server 2008 is the next generation of server operating system from Microsoft. It is successor to Windows 2003 and was originally known as Windows Server Longhorn until May the 16th in 2007 when Bill Gates announced its official title. Windows Server 2008 is a server operating system containing many of the new client features from Windows Vista, not unlike the relationship between Windows Server 2003 and Windows XP. Beta 1 was released in July of 2005. Beta 2 was announced and released in May 2006, and the final beta, Beta 3, was released publicly in April this year. Today on Tech Talk Radio, we talk to Julius Sinkevicius, the Senior Product Manager of Microsoft Windows Server Division based in the United States. Julius joined the Windows Server Division in 2005 as a Senior Product Manager for Windows Server 2003 and Microsoft Windows Server 2008 product. Julia started working in information technology in 1991 and has held various positions in systems and network administration. In 1998, he joined Microsoft as part of the Microsoft Consulting Services Group and worked with some of Canada's largest companies deploying infrastructure servers. In 2000, he moved to Redmond, Washington and worked in the Microsoft Learning and Tablet PC groups. I was keen to find out about the evolution of Server 2003 to 2008 and how it would make a difference to small business, its target market. Windows Server 2008 is built from the same code base as Windows Vista, therefore it shares much of its same architecture and functionality. So Julius, can you tell us a little bit about what's new in Server 2008?
Well, Windows Server 2008 is a major release for us compared to Windows Server 2003 R2. And as you mentioned, it's based on the same development project that Vista was. That was the codename Longhorn. So it does share a lot of the same features that Vista has from an architecture and technology point of view. But obviously, because it's a server release, there's a lot of new features that are specifically designed for enterprises and businesses and their networks. So, first off, we improve what we call the fundamentals of the operating system. So this is improvements in manageability and reliability of the operating system, allowing people to spend less time on everyday tasks and putting more time on solving complex issues or adding value back to the business. Also making the operating system much more reliable, so reducing the amount of patching and reboots that's required for the operating system. So that's just at the fundamental level. And we also made improvements in adding protection or increased security for the operating system. So we have network access protection. We have protection for data stored on the hard drive with a technology called BitLocker. And also we've made some other enhancements in our directory services. Also, we have a new web server in Windows Server 2008, IIS 7, which is a big enhancement. And we'll be introducing virtualization as part of the operating system with Windows Server 2008. So a lot of changes compared to 2003.
All right, let's put it into perspective for a small business these days. Take, for example, maybe a small to medium-sized business, 5 clients, maybe a roving laptop or two. They want internet access and a print server. What benefits will 2008 bring to them?
Well, there's from different perspectives. So from a management perspective, we've made the management of the server a lot easier. So if you were familiar with 2003, just to get the server up and running and configuring it, you had to go through between 6 and 8 different steps and use different tools just to get the operating system up and running. Now it's very simple, it's very streamlined. There's one tool called Server Manager, which will allow you to easily bring up the server and configure it. So for a small, medium business, just bringing the operating system up is very simple.
Just talking about compatibility or backward compatibility with clients such as XP and 2000 and even, heaven forbid, 98, how do these operating systems talk to Server 2008?
So from a client perspective or from your desktop connecting to the server, it would work just like any other server, so very similar to 2003. So we don't distinguish between different clients. We still use the same protocols. However, if you're using Windows Vista on the as your client, we made several protocol changes on the networking side and on the file access side, specifically with what we call the SMB, the protocol for accessing files off the server. And this, the new protocol changes will make significant performance changes for end users using Vista talking to a Windows Server 2008 server. And if you have a distributed environment where you might have a branch office or you have mobile users, you'll see that the performance is greatly improved in those kind of disconnected scenarios.
Let's have a look at IIS 7, which is the built-in web server, which comes with, well, whether it's IIS 6 was in R2 of 2003, and we're moving on to IIS 7. Are there anything new and exciting that's going to get everyone going for the new version of IIS?
Yeah, there's a lot of new things. So IIS 6, which a lot of people don't realize, but we released that in April 2003, and over the 4 years we've had it out on the market, we've had zero critical security vulnerabilities. So it's been a great product for us. With IIS 7, we take that even further. So it's more componentized. So IIS 6 had 7 different configuration options that were up to over 40 with IIS 7. So that means you only install what you need. Because you only install the components that you want, you only need to patch what you need. So it becomes easier to manage.
And terminal services, what are the major changes to that?
So there's two great new enhancements. One's called the remote app, and the other one is the terminal services gateway. So what remote app allows you to do is to publish an application through terminal services. And so when the end user launches that application, they don't get the remote desktop. What they'll get is just that application. So for example, Visio is a common example that we use at Microsoft, because I don't necessarily use Visio all the time. But if someone sends me a Visio document, I want to be able to open up that document. So I can hit a terminal server, and Visio will come up on my desktop. Even though it's running off that server, it looks like and acts like it's running on my desktop. It supports drag and drop, interact with the system tray and so on.
And Microsoft is boasting these new technologies, which you've mentioned earlier on, like Server Core and PowerShell. Can you briefly tell us a little bit about what they are and how they work in 2008?
Sure. So first I'll talk about Server Core. So Server Core is an installation option. So when you install, whether it's standard or enterprise or data center edition or web server, you have an option to install Server Core. And what Server Core will do is it will install the base operating system files that you need, such as the kernel, networking services, and so on. And then it will install these the role that you want, so if you want to be a file server or a DNS server and so on. And that's it. And so it's basically the core operating system. But what it doesn't have like Windows Explorer or Internet Explorer or media players. In fact, there's no graphical user interface whatsoever. So when you boot it up, it comes up like a very similar to what DOS used to look like.
It's a command line system, is it? Yeah.
A command line.
Yep.
And everything is managed by command line. Or you can manage it remotely by using command line or MMC. Microsoft Management Console tools to manage that remote server. Because it is a minimal installation of the operating system, it does require less patching. In our estimation, is that if we had done this for Windows Server 2003, you would have been able to eliminate about 60% of the patches for those specific roles that run on the Server Core. Now, Server Core doesn't support all the roles. So, for example, SharePoint services. SharePoint requires the .NET framework to be present, and so there is no .NET framework on Server Core, so you can't run SharePoint. But you can run, file, print, DNS, DCP. I mentioned IIS, also Windows Media Services, and some other key roles. So that's the server installation. Now, PowerShell, on the other hand, is a new scripting and environment and language that allows you to create and execute fairly complex scripts so you can start automating different parts of managing your servers. So it's based on the .NET framework, so it is very powerful. It leverages your existing scripts and batch files you have, but also has a new set of commands that you can do things like, create user accounts and make settings on the server and so on. So it becomes a very easy way to automate a lot of things that people used to do manually. And that's kind of our goal with Windows Server 2008, is to really allow you to spend less time on managing everyday things and reducing the complexity of the server. So as a business, you can focus more on things that add value back to the business. So one of the items we're encouraging right now with our customers is that we've reached a beta 3 milestone a few months ago, and customers should be going out and getting beta 3 and start trialing it in their environment to see how beta 3 will work in their environment and what kind of changes that they need to make in order to move to 2008.
Windows Server 2008 is scheduled for official release on February 27 next year. You can hear the full half-hour conversation I had with Julius, which goes into a little bit more technical detail, on our website at techtalkradio.com.au.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! Oh, this thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
How many times have you grabbed your favourite MP3 player and jumped in the car and wanted to listen to some music?
or even mowed the lawns and stuff like that. And you think, oh, wouldn't it be great if I could actually get the signal off my...
charge the battery?
Do you have that problem, do you?
I really do.
Speaking of that, how's your mini disc tonight?
Are we listening to the whole... the device, yeah.
No, it's all good.
You jump into your car. This is a new little MP3 player come FM transmitter built into one. So what you do is you whack it into the side of your machine, transfer your songs across the MP3 player, and then you can just chuck it in the car seat and hit play and tune in on your radio.
See, I don't know why this hasn't been thought of before, because there's two components that I have in my car. I've got the actual MP3 player, and then I've got one of those little Belkin transmitters. Yeah, yeah, but this
there's
is
two things, and there's cables things. That
it's
dangle, and
cables, and it's you've got
and you hit the brakes, and it goes underneath your feet, and it ties your legs. Well,
I'd rather have them separately, because then I can buy the best MP3 player, the MP3 player of my choice, and connect it rather than buy this, you know, maybe dodgy MP3 player just because it's got an FM transmitter in it.
But you've found one though, have you?
I have, but see, not everyone's like you. Are they? Really?
Yeah. Which is probably
saying,
a good thing.
We were just saying that in the break. Not everyone wants to be a nerd like Adam. But this is just convenience. Like this would pass the wife test. You were also speaking about this earlier on in the evening. And that is the fact that they can take their music with them. They can hit play. They can download it off wherever they want to get it from. Take it in the hit play, tune it into their FM radio, and away they go.
The wife acceptability factor.
Which is a critical...
The WAF.
It is.
It's critical in the you know, desire to purchase something, isn't it? Can my wife use it?
So who makes this one?
I have no idea. I knew you'd ask me that. This is a... there's no brand on it, but it is available for about 30 quid at the moment, which is around about 70 or 80 bucks Australian, which is not bad. We'll probably see them on the market here, so it's very ordinary that they don't actually tell us who actually makes this little sucker. But nonetheless, it's coming. The technology that you would expect to see in a wireless FM device is not far away. So that's the Tech Talk Radio Gadget of the Week.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
Andrew, Adam, got scratches on your favourite CDs and DVDs?
I got fingerprints.
I rip them and then put them in the cupboard. I only use them
You
once.
Can't say that. But that's exactly what I do with my kids, and they treat them as coasters and frisbees in the front room, and so they last a week and then you have to do another burn. Yeah.
Well, this is the thing. I found a blog which is at dubs.wisebread.com/ quickly removing scratches from CDs and DVDs, and we'll put that link on the
forum.
How
does it work?
Well, this blog is a collection of videos, and this guy's got the best ways that he's found to remove minor scratches and bumps
with a car polish and wax it
from
up
your
and...
CDs. Yeah, he's got car polish, he's got wax, he's got Brasso, which Brasso is a brand of metal cleaner. I don't know what you call it apart from Brasso.
Hydrochloric acid or something,
isn't
it? Yeah.
He says here, I used to look in wonder and amazement at some of my CDs and DVDs. How could they get in such a state?
He must have kids too.
He definitely has. He's gone surfing, found a good collection of videos showing the best ways to remove minor scratches and bumps from CDs and DVDs. So check that out, wisebread.com, quickly removing scratches from CDs and DVDs.
Have you ever been to the video library and you go to the kids section and you think, oh my goodness, I hope these are going to play when you get them home. Otherwise, there's a lot of disappointment on certain little girls' faces.
Try getting Bob the Builder from the library.
Someone was telling me...
not play.
Yeah, exactly. Someone was telling me the other day they've got this little abrasive cleaner up there which takes a layer of...
On this blog it says you can use Brasso, you can use chewing gum, you can use toothpaste, and you can use banana.
Banana?
And all these things. He's got videos of all these things and how it will clean up your precious discs.
Fine if they don't belong to you. I'll try it on the library
You can get
first.
A video library one first. Exactly. I think that's the way to go.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
British secondary students will be able to study the historical development of computer games in place of traditional history. Year 12 students will be able to take diverse diploma courses as part of Prime Minister Gordon Brown's plan to encourage future university studies.
Must be a gamer.
The Advanced Media Studies Diploma will require students to, quote, critically respond to a range of computer games, quote, and discuss why enthusiasts like playing them. The qualifications will be part of a range of new diplomas which pupils will be able to study instead of more traditional subjects.
Like science and humanities.
Yeah, important things like that. It will study computer games instead.
Get yourself a degree in Leisure Suit Larry.
That's what I
Did
need.
Did you say degree?
Yes, in his Land of the Lounge Lizards. Yeah. How good was that?
Dear.
Yeah. So that's probably exactly what it's aimed at, Adam. Yeah. Traditional history of computer games. Leisure Suit Larry.
Yeah.
All the text adventures.
StarCraft.
Yeah.
Zork.
Oh, StarCraft. Xenos. Rules, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, StarCraft. Yeah. All the Warcraft, StarCraft type games.
Yeah. What about, what's the other one, the big one?
What online? About Wolfenstein and Doom?
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
Well, oh, that were all those for...
Return of Castle Wolfenstein.
Return was a good one,
We should do a show on games, shouldn't we? All right, you've been listening to Tech Talk Radio. It's been wonderful having Adam Turner. He got off the couch and came into the studio, so it's really been view from the studio tonight. Thank you very much, Adam, for coming in.
Pleasure to be here.
Wonderful.
Glad that the doctor was in the house this time.
Yeah, no, he does abscond from time to time.
Had a pretty good run lately, though.
You have. You next week?
No idea.
That's 7 days away.
What you know in 6.5 days' time. Yes.
Oh, dear, nothing's changed, has it? All right, listening to Tech Talk. You have been listening to Tech Talk Radio, Dr. Ron, Adam Turner, and myself, Andrew McComb. Don't forget feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. We like hearing from you guys. Or pick the phone up and ring 1-300-664-882 and leave a message, and we'll get them to air and all that sort of stuff. So until next week, it's bye for now.
Tech Talk Radio is brought to you each and every week by a band of dedicated professionals from within the broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer and host Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Sir Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins. Our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Production facilities are courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night from 8 p.m. The producers wish to thank all the stations that are taking the show, including 3WBC, 3XX, Cairns FM and 4KZ. For syndication, sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit the website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.